I've lived for over 2,000 years. I am Scottish. I can complain about things.
Shush. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of The Secrets of Doctor Who, the show in which we discuss the long-running science fiction series Doctor Who. And today we're going to be discussing the second episode of Series 9, or for you Americans, Season 9, Witches Familiar, which is the conclusion to the two-part opener of the season. I'm Dom Bettinelli, filling in for Father Roderick Von Hogan, our usual host who has taken the TARDIS for a spin to the Eternal City, Rome, this week. Joining me today is our usual panel, Father Corey Stika from Malta, Montana. Hello, Father Corey.
Howdy, how's it going?
It's going great, going great. My first time in the big chair driving the TARDIS, so actually I couldn't be driving the TARDIS since Father Roderick has it. So
well, we won't grade you too heavily, I'm sure. So,
and then all the way from California, Jimmy Akin. Hello, Jimmy.
Hi, how's it going?
It's great, going great. So I thought we'd just jump right into it because this was another jam-packed episode, lots going on. But first, let's kind of set the scene of where we are. This is the second episode of a two-parter, and we left off where the Doctor has been summoned by Davros, the creator of the Daleks, to go to Skaros. The Doctor has left his last will and testament with Missy, who's come back from the dead somehow, which we find out how in this episode, a little preview there. And then Missy and Clara chase after the Doctor to try to save him from himself because they think he's preparing to die, or you know that he's given his last will. So they're there in Skaro with the Doctor and Davros and all the Daleks. And at the very end of the episode, just kind of jumping ahead, to all intents and purposes, Missy gets shot by the Daleks and disappears like usual, and Clara gets killed, and the TARDIS is destroyed, and everything is over, and that's the end of Doctor Who as we know it, but not really. So that's where we ended last episode, and then we begin. Father Corey, what did you think of the beginning of this episode? You know, like, give me a little like what happened and how you thought, what you felt about the beginning.
Well, you know, like a lot of times in Doctor Who, they love to do the cliffhangers where you're not sure what's going to happen. You know they're going to get out of it. You know somehow they're going to get out of it, but you're not sure how. And it opens actually with Clara and Missy outside of the city. They're out in this, you know, desert wasteland outside the city. And Missy's sitting there sharpening a stick. Clara, however, is hanging upside down. And she's not sure why. Well, Missy makes it clear the stick is in case they need to hunt for food. And Clara's hanging upside down in case there's nothing to hunt. You know, fill in the blank there. I thought they did a good job of explaining how they escaped, that which is actually kind of rare for Doctor Who, that they actually explain some of these kind of things, where the reason why Missy seems to keep getting popped up is because of a little trick that she learned from the Doctor. And that's to take the power from energy weapons and run it through the vortex manipulator, which is a crude and nasty time travel device that you slap on your wrist. Right. Well, it allows you to jump also in space as well. And so they were able to, that when both Clara and Missy were shot, they were able to channel that power was channeled into those manipulators and they transported now instead of.
We learned about this trick by a little flashback device from Missy, who kind of gives us sets the scene, and we see this flashback to, you know, we see the fourth Doctor, and I think we see the first Doctor too.
Yeah, it flashes between the fourth and the first, and then to Peter Capaldi, the current.
She says,
Doctor.
I don't remember which incarnation it was, so let's just say it's the eyebrows, and so we see the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi. Jimmy, is this an actual? From an actual episode of Doctor Who from the classic Who?
No, it's not. This is something they made up, which is one of the reasons that we don't have any actual footage other than the brief glimpse of the fourth and the first Doctor. It does tie into something else from the past, though. At the conclusion of her story, Missy mentions that the Doctor actually didn't end up escaping, that he fell into a pit of vampire monkeys. And that's actually from a comic book story.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if that was, if any of this was actual previous. Now, do we consider, like, the books and the comic books and some of that stuff, is that considered canon? I know canon is an important topic for Star Trek fans and Star Wars fans. Is it considered canon, and is canon an important thing for Doctor Who fans?
I think that Doctor Who fans are pretty much free to choose to select whatever they wish is canon. Stephen Moffat seems to have taken a fairly liberal approach to what counts as canon. He, for example, has said that any discrepancies between any of the different Doctor Who materials can always be explained as anomalies caused by the Time War. So they've kind of got to get out of jail free card with any continuity contradictions. He's also appealed to things in the comics before. For example, in Night of the Doctor, where we got to see the Eighth Doctor's regeneration, just as he's about to drink from the chalice that'll turn him into the War Doctor, he names all of the companions that he had in other Doctor Who materials, since he didn't have any other adventures besides the 1996 TV movie.
Right.
Okay. And as we know, Moffat is not big on continuity to begin with. It's enough just to move the story forward. But if something happens, a little Deus Ex Machina, a little just kind of out of the blue thing, to pull it from here or there, as long as the story moves forward, he kind of papers over it, and we're just moving forward. Okay. So one of the things I thought was interesting was we didn't start where we ended. The previous episode ended with the Doctor back on the battlefield with young Davros pointing the Dalek gun at him and yelling "Exterminate!" But we start with Missy and Clara, and that's a kind of an interesting move for it. And so we're supposed to, I think, we'll put a peg in that and come back to it later, which it's important at the end. One of the Doctor, the one principle that they come up with at the end of their conversation back and forth, it's this neat little trick of exposition that Moffat gives us with Clara and Missy kind of going through this, and Missy's leading Clara through this to this conclusion of the Doctor always goes into every situation assuming he's going to win. And that's how he always gets out of it. It's not just that he's clever, as Missy says. There's a million dead people who are clever, but he's got this true belief he's going to win. But has this always been true? Has the Doctor always gone into all? I feel like that there's been plenty of times where he seemed kind of hopeless. What do you feel about that, Father Corey?
I'm trying to think though. I mean, I do think they have. They have kind of done some of that, but then, you know, but there's a question of, is it being hopeless or is he just hasn't seen the way out yet? You know, and if you want to take it that way, he assumes he's always going to win. Maybe what we're seeing is more despair because he hasn't seen the way out yet, you know, of course, they always have to have, you know, the world's going to blow up unless the Doctor comes up with his clever idea type of situations that, you know, they always love stuff like that. I don't know. I don't know if we ever really see true despair from the Doctor, at least as far as survival is concerned. Now, as far as like some of the earlier parts of the rebooted series where like the Ninth Doctor, earlier Tenth Doctor were despairing of Gallifrey, for example. But that's more of a different situation.
Right. Like they didn't think that could ever, that they could ever go home again. That was more
correct.
Self-recrimination. Jimmy, what do you think? Is this a unique situation, this particular moment, this battle with Davros here, that this is the first time he's truly thought he's, you know, assumes he's not going to win?
No, I think I'm sure I could think of more examples if I sat down and worked on it. But he has despaired of his own survival any number of times. Certainly, he's done it of a particular incarnation survival. That was the case, for example, in the Fifth Doctor's exit story, The Caves of Androzani, where he knowingly, and for that matter also with the Third Doctor, when he exposed himself to radiation in Planet of the Spiders. So he regularly faces the demise of a particular incarnation, but he's even faced the demise of himself altogether, which we saw as recently as the 50th anniversary special, where Matt Smith's Doctor concluded, I'm the 13th, so there's nobody after me, and this is going to be it. And it wasn't until we had a Deus Ex Machina at the end, where the Time Lords fed him all this new regeneration energy, that that he had any hope.
Right. I think the battle at Trenzalore. I mean, there was this assumption of with the Impossible Girl that it felt like that was a moment where he didn't assume he was going to win, that he was going to sacrifice himself.
Completely. That's what I meant.
Oh, okay. So I was thought that was the two mixing them up in my mind, the two different things.
I'm sorry. No, I said 50th anniversary special. That was actually the one with the War Doctor. So, yeah, no, you're correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Have Jimmy tell me that I'm correct about a bit of Doctor Who lore is a very big deal for me. So now we go from this moment where Clara and Missy, they resolve to march back to the city. I just got to comment how great Michelle Gomez, who plays Missy, is in every scene. I mean, she steals every scene, and there are little bits of both physical comedy and just the way she plays it that are great. I mean, there's a sort of a madcap craziness. You know, the previous Masters that I've seen, they've been crazy, insane, you know, madmen, but in of a different menacing sort. Whereas Missy is much more sort of almost like Batman's Joker, just sort of unbalanced. I enjoy the interplay with her, and when you don't quite know what she's going to do next. I mean, there's a really interesting moment there where, you know, it's just that the playfulness where she says, you know, Clara says, "Can I have a stick?" And you know, "Get your own." You know, just sort of like this throwaway line as they walk away.
And then she starts skipping.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I mean, it's just this. It's lighthearted, but it's also a little bit unsettling this whole time because you're just waiting for her to do something that you know she's going to do. Just and I remember that from last season when she killed
Seb.
Actually, it was the young woman, the scientist, Oswald.
Osgood.
Osgood. Sorry. Yes, because I knew that was wrong because it's Clara. But Osgood, you know, that sort of just a throwaway, just boom, gone, you know, you're dead. And that was, so this is that unsettling aspect. But I enjoy that character. I think Moffat does a very good job of writing that sort of character, again, to annoy all the fans out there, to bring in other stuff from Moffat. It sort of, in many ways, it's like the Dr. Moriarty character from Sherlock. So I find those both interesting. So from here, we return to the Doctor finally, and the Doctor is in the room with Davros, and there's the back and forth, and there's some interplay between them, but the result is of the Doctor telling Davros, you know, get out, and we think you tell him to get out of the room, but what we learn is he's telling him to get out of the chair, even though he's half a man, you know, literally wired into this chair. The Daleks get this alarm where, you know, they hear Davros calling for help, and, you know, they assume, and we assume, that it's Davros rolling down the hallway to the room where the Daleks are gathered, and in comes the Doctor riding in Davros's chair and has this great line, "Admit it, you've all had this exact nightmare." And it's just this great moment, and it's kind of wild. Then, you know, he goads them into shooting at him, and we think, oh, you know, that's it. The Doctor, you know, they're shooting at the Doctor with this blinding flash of light. How could he possibly survive? And then the light goes away, and there he's sitting holding a cup of tea. And again, and a nod to that that continuity problem that we often have is he says, "Where'd I get the tea? It doesn't matter. Just move on."
Mm-hmm. Actually, the what he says specifically is the real question is, where did I get the cup of tea? I'm the doctor. Just accept it.
Yeah.
And I really hated that. This is one of my problems with the way Stephen Moffat writes. Mm-hmm. He often portrays the doctor as this unbelievably cool person who can just do anything. And there's a kind of juvenile relishing of the doctor's uber coolness. And there are instances where, like, Matt Smith would be strutting about just putting all of his uber coolness on display. And I just thought it was I thought it was bad writing. I thought it made the doctor unsympathetic. And I think that he's got a new problem in a way with this kind of approach, because he's explained how Missy survived. He's explained how Clara survived. He ends up explaining how the TARDIS survived. But then we've got this cup of tea thrown in with absolutely no explanation, and he rubs that in our face. And I find this problematic because Moffat knows and has even talked about on the show the fact that, you know, rules and limits give the story structure. And he talks about that in Silence in the Library, for example, where the doctor's talking about how a death at the end of a biography helps give our life form. And without that, it would just, everything would be a comedy. And so he acknowledges as a writer that rules give a structure, but he's in danger of totally demolishing all of the rules in the series, because now anybody can die and be back in seconds with or without an explanation. Mm-hmm. And that's just turning the series dramatically. It runs the risk of it turning it into silly putty. I hope he pulls back from that. He's had the sense to do that before. Back during the David Tennant and Matt Smith era, he noted that the Doctor had kind of gotten too big. And he even used that phrase on the show, that the Doctor had gotten too big to where all he had to do was walk into a situation and say, "I'm the Doctor," and he could intimidate anybody into surrendering.
Right.
And that destroys the drama of the series. And now we're at a similar point where he pulled back from that and had everybody in the universe sort of forget the Doctor. But now we're at a similar point where anybody can be killed and instantly be back. So I think he needs to pull back from that too.
Well, you know, I kind of wonder too, though, as sitting here thinking, I wonder if that is almost Moffat, you know, he put his own words into the doctor's mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Just deal with it.
Yeah, totally.
I can do it. Just deal with it.
Yeah. I'm a little torn. Does he mean to amuse the audience by that? Or is that kind of an up yours to the audience?
To amuse himself, maybe. It kind of turns the doctor into a magician, a magical character, a leprechaun per se, who can pull things out of thin air. And I see what you're saying, Jimmy. I mean, I was amused by it, but I can see where it creates problems, you know, potential problems for the story going forward and for the doctor. You know, the Capaldi was, when we originally were introduced to him as the next doctor, I think there was a lot of a sense of that this was going to be a more serious doctor. And he started out that way at the beginning when we saw him at the beginning of last season. It was a little more serious. I mean, there was the obvious at the beginning, the effects of the regeneration, but there was still, I think it was a little more serious, but he's gotten a lot less serious, a lot more like we were used to seeing from Matt Smith, like you were saying, and even from some of David Tennant's stuff.
No, I wonder though, and I will have to see going forward with this season, if that has to do with kind of the, you know, he knows this is the end. He knows he's done. So why not just go all out and just kind of, didn't he say something like, you know, about all the doctor being there and it's not just his regeneration, but all of it. I can't remember the exact line, but wasn't there something along that lines?
Was in in the previous episode?
Previous episode,
when
yeah.
He was in the castle. Yeah, it was something along the lines of when he was acting strange, he was, you know, giving the hugs and complimenting Clara, and she was noticing it. So he was, there was a sense of, in one sense, that he was kind of channeling the prior personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it'll be interesting to see whether this continues to be his, you know, as Davros says, always playing the fool. And I wonder if that's a little self-reflection by the writer on the way he's portraying the Doctor, or maybe it's intentional. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So from here, we return to Missy and Clara, who are standing at the edge of a... I'm not sure if this is the exact moment when they're standing at the edge of a pit, looking down into the Dalek sewer. Just another great Missy moment where Clara says, it looks pretty deep. Maybe we should throw a stone in. And she says, oh, maybe. And then kicks Clara in to fall.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, about 20 feet. And that might have been the previous line. But now they're in the Dalek sewer, where we learn something disturbing about Dalek sewers. Jimmy, what is it we learn about Daleks and their waste disposal systems?
Well, according to Missy, Daleks don't have a lot of waste, but they do apparently, their waste does apparently include themselves. They get older and older and more decrepit, but they never die, according to her. And so the Dalek sewers are actually made up of decaying Daleks who are still alive but no longer able to function in Dalek society. And so the word for in the Dalek language, the word for sewer and the word for graveyard are the same.
You know, I wonder if this was a bit of commentary on society, you know, where and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but this idea of, you know, that we dispose of the old and the useless and the suffering, and we shunt them away to the sewers or the graveyards, where this is a sort of living death. I'm not saying that Moffat might be listening to Pope Francis on this sort of stuff, but there's this interesting idea, the concept of be careful of shoving off your old and your tired and your useless, because that may come back to haunt you someday, as we see it comes back to haunt the Daleks later on in this episode. So then we have some great scenes of, let's see, going through the sewer, and Missy has a really good point. They overhear the doctor above, I think, and there's this great moment where they realize, Missy and Clara realize, that the doctor is without hope. And we see him, the doctor without hope in this scene between him and Davros, I wanted to step back. The scene between him and the Daleks. He wants them to, tell me that Clara is not dead, and if she is, you better be careful the way you tell me. He seems without hope, and thus he seems much more dangerous. He's, threatening them with this exterminator gun. He's almost homicidal. I mean, the doctor hates weapons, right? And yet in this moment, he's in such despair that the line between him and, say, Missy, or him and Davros, becomes blurred. What do you think of that, Father Corey?
It's kind of interesting scene, where you see it every once in a while too, where he seems to hit one of these spots where he's like, you know what? He's struggling with himself. I think that's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. As I'm thinking, he's struggling with himself on maintaining who he is, because there have been times throughout the series where you've seen where he could go one way or the other. I mean, he really could go, just completely abandon his principles, abandon his ideals, and just, take revenge or just take the easy way out using a weapon or something like that. But then he doesn't. He goes, he comes up with a better plan, if you will. Mm-hmm. And this kind of seems like one of those moments where he would say, you know what, maybe it's not worth it. I know I'm going to die anyway, so I may as well go out in a blaze of glory or something like that. And take them with me. I don't know. I mean, that's, but of course he doesn't. He
is overwhelmed by Colony Sarf in a profoundly disturbing visual image, looked obviously to be some CGI. I'm glad that Peter Capaldi didn't have to have snakes covering him as they did. when we're in these back and forth between Davros and the doctor, they kind of reminded me of the temptation of Christ in the desert with the devil. That Davros keeps egging him on, be the, you know, a genocidal savior, you know, save them by killing the Daleks, save you know, Clara by doing this thing and come down to my level. I mean, did either of you kind of get that sense? Or did that occur to you while you watching that? Father, Jimmy, did you get that vibe from it?
No, I didn't. And correct me if I'm mistaken, because I may be misremembering, but at that point, the Doctor believes Clara is dead, and Davros is, and Missy too, and right. So that's why he's despairing, and Davros is trying to get him to just contemplate being a god and killing the Daleks just because he hates Daleks.
Right, right. I mean, there's not so much saving them, but sort of maybe, I think, saving the universe from Daleks in that sense.
Yeah.
But I found that interplay, and we get this brief comment from Davros to Colony Sarf about be subtle. What does he say? I have the line here. Be subtle, Colony Sarf. Tonight we entrap a Time Lord. And so there's this hint that what's about to happen all may not be as it seems. So if we're paying attention, we might have seen that. So what Davros is doing is trying to entrap the Doctor into... Davros hates the Doctor so much that he's willing to sacrifice all the Daleks in order to get the Doctor to just be like him for a moment. Is that just pure hatred? Is that a sort of pathos, a pathetic, I'm alone and I don't want to be alone? What do you think? What do you think is behind Davros's desire to get the Doctor to do this? Why this now?
On one level, I think he does desire that just to prove he's right to the Doctor. If he can make the Doctor like him, then that gives him a sense of validation. On another level, though, he's just doing it to get the regeneration energy.
Right, right. He's maneuvering him into that moment that we see at the end where he's trying to... he assumes the Doctor won't commit the genocide, or...
Well, it's very much manipulation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's trying to manipulate the Doctor, manipulate his emotions, and, you know, get that, you know, sympathetic character that we see later, you know, talk about compassion and all that.
Compassion being his downfall, being a disease, mm-hmm. like a cancer. Yes, it's true. I mean, he plays on the Doctor's compassion, and he says your compassion will kill you at one point, and the Doctor says, "I hope so." You know, I hope that's what ends up killing me, as opposed to, you know, violence or aggression.
You know, all I could think of when I was watching that scene was Genesis of the Daleks, and I know we talked about it before. They showed just a clip of it in the previous episode with the fourth Doctor. He's standing there with those two wires ready to detonate the explosives to kill all the Daleks.
That will destroy the Daleks because he'd gone back in time to kill them at their beginning.
Right. Right. And it's, you know, do I have the right to do this? Do I have the right? And, you know, Sarah Jane Smith, who of course has shown up in the new series as well as a companion for one episode, you know, or two episodes, she, you know, she's trying to convince him to do it. And he, you know, of course we talked about it, that he doesn't go all the way.
Right. And once again, his compassion holds him back. And, you know, in a sense, you might say, and I guess I mean, we're kind of jumping to the end here, but in a sense, you might say his compassion was sort of a defeat because it led to him regenerating the Daleks, but it was also his compassion was a win because it injected something into the Dalek genome, shall we say, from the beginning. And we can, I don't want to necessarily spoil the surprise, even though everyone listening to this has definitely watched the episode, but let's pretend that we're taking this one step at a time. We switch to this, to another, back to Missy and Clara, who are still in the sewers. And, Missy uses Clara as bait to capture a Dalek, killing it with a brooch by puncturing the exterior with a metal that can puncture anything. And letting the sewer Daleks, to, you know, in their hatred to kill a living regular Dalek, And then she puts Clara inside.
Actually, if we could stop for just a second about what the brooch she uses, there's a couple of interesting things there. One, she says she got it on Gallifrey, and it was a gift from the Doctor on some occasion in the life of the Master's daughter.
Right.
And if you look at the front of the brooch, there's a portrait of a female there, and that might be the Master's daughter. The other thing is she says it's made of a dark star alloy, and a dark star, which she says goes through Dalek's life like a knife through people, which is a nice phrase. But a dark star is a black hole, and there's not really any way to alloy material from a black hole because black holes don't have material. And so we've got a scientific implausibility there. But
I wonder if she means something like a neutron star or something like that, which is an incredibly, the neutron stars are the most dense material.
It could be just
a slip there.
Yeah, if it was a neutron star, it would have all of the other particles besides neutrons pressed out of it, and it'd be hard to alloy that with anything. But also, neutron stars shine, so they're not dark.
Yeah.
So I think we have, but I just treat half of whatever comes out of Missy's mouth as crazy delirium anyway. So
it could be anything, but it could be the tinfoil from Gallifrey.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that she does mention a daughter. You know, we know that the Doctor, especially the first Doctor, had a granddaughter that was mentioned in the time of the first Doctor. So it could stand to reason that the Master himself has had children as well. I mean, that's but as you say, take everything that Missy says with a grain of salt. It could be just a fantasy that she's spinning anyway. So from there we have Missy's plan, which is to put Clara inside the captured Dalek shell and use her to infiltrate the Dalek base above them. What I found interesting here is this is not the first time that Jenna Coleman, in a different Oswald, has found herself in a Dalek. And I wonder if there's any intention in this scene. If it was an intentional callback. Father Corey, do you remember that particular episode?
Yeah, that was the
Asylum of the Daleks.
Asylum of the Daleks. Yeah. And, you know, the Doctor thinks he's trying to help her out, and here she's been captured and turned into a Dalek. And she doesn't realize it. She's got this whole little fantasy world where she's in a escape pod or a ship baking soufflés.
Baking soufflés, that's right.
Yeah. You know, that was the whole big thing. But that was, I can't remember, was that the first time we'd seen her?
Yes,
it was. Yes, it was. Because it was that one, and then it was the Victorian episode, and then it was the Clara we know.
Right.
And in that one, she's also she's trying to declaim her own identity, but then she's also involuntarily saying, I am a Dalek.
Mm-hmm. In the Asylum of the Daleks, so she was doing
right.
that?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of at the crisis moment for her character psychologically. She's asserting her own identity and that she's not a Dalek, but then she ends up saying, I am a Dalek in a kind of robotic voice. And so I thought this was a deliberate callback to that.
Very interesting. It also interesting that it was in that episode that because she was a Dalek, the Oswin was able to manipulate all Daleks to forget the Doctor. And that was sort of what you were talking about before, Jimmy, about how they managed to take the Doctor from being this presence who scared everyone when he walked into a room to being once again able to be a bit anonymous. So the Doctor was surprised because he'd never been able to hack into the Daleks. So there was that moment in that episode. It's very interesting. We get revealed to us that the Dalek, whatever Clara says in the shell, inside the shell, the Dalek doesn't necessarily just repeat it. It transliterates it. Mm-hmm. So that she says, I love you, and it comes out exterminate, or you're different from me. It comes out as exterminate. But Missy says a very interesting thing, that Cybermen suppress emotion, Daleks use emotion as power, energy.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that, Father Corey?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I guess it was kind of an interesting way to explain why Daleks always say exterminate, exterminate, exterminate before they start blasting instead of just blasting.
Right.
You know, because, of course, how many times did the Doctor escape when the Daleks are exterminate, exterminate, exterminate? Oh, where'd he go? You know?
I've loaded my gun and now he's out of the way.
He's not there. I did kind of get a kick out of the scene, though, where Missy's all but dancing because Clara's worked up and firing and she's avoiding the blasts. That was kind of a cute scene. But.
Jimmy, is this the first time we've seen people in piloting a Dalek from the inside?
No, we saw this way back at the beginning of the show in the very second series. The first series was where we met the Doctor and his initial companions, including Susan, his granddaughter, and Ian and Barbara, her school teachers, who teach at the same school that Clara now teaches at. In fact, Ian is, if you read the signage, is the like the principal of the school now. Mm. And Ian was the first person we saw inside of a Dalek. In the second Doctor Who story, mm-hmm. Doctor Who, or just called the Daleks then, they took a Khaled mutant out of a Dalek and put Ian in it. So we had the same theme going right back then at the beginning.
Now, were the same principles at work here where it would transliterate what he said?
No. If I recall correctly, his voice did come out sounding Dalek-y, but it didn't change.
Right. It was still obviously him, but it had that mechanical sound.
Yeah. Now,
does the exterminate catchphrase, does that go back to that very first episode? Mm-hmm. Saw the Daleks?
If I'm not mistaken, yes.
Okay. Yes, it does, as I recall, too.
Okay. So a trademark catchphrase all the way to the beginning. So we switch from Clara and Missy, unless there's anything else in that scene, which was full of different nice bits. We'll move back to the Doctor and Davros, where they're debating, you know, why did the Doctor leave Gallifrey? And the Doctor wants to think that he left because of boredom, but Davros doesn't believe him. He says, no, I need to know why. Now, we've seen before, there was a prior episode, I don't recall which one exactly, where it was revealed that young Time Lords at a particular age are taken to look at the unfiltered vortex, time vortex. And for some, it causes them to run away. Others go mad, which is we're told what happened to the master. And we're kind of left with this impression that the reason the Doctor's running is that he looked into the time vortex. Of course, when we see the first Doctor, he's an elderly man who has a granddaughter, so it doesn't quite mesh with that explanation. But what did you think? What did you like? Are we getting the story here? What do you think is the story here with the why the Doctor does what he does, Jim?
I think that Moffat is raising an interesting question. The Doctor he says he's on the run just because Gallifrey was boring, and that may have been part of the truth, but. Davros then says, nobody runs the way you have for such a trivial reason. And the way the Doctor has just constantly been on the motion and constantly in danger, that could suggest some bigger reason. And Davros speculates maybe it's because the Doctor was trying to, in an Oedipus-like manner, avoid fulfilling a prophecy about himself, that he would be involved in the creation of a Dalek Time Lord hybrid that would be an even greater warrior than either one of those races. And so he speculates maybe that's the reason the Doctor is running. I don't think the show is likely to ever definitively establish why the Doctor is running, but I think Moffat has raised an interesting question. On the other hand, if you were to look at it from another perspective, you could say, yeah, nobody would run this way just because they were bored, but someone might run this way if they had a pathological need for danger and excitement.
Mm. Right, right. And it's sort of hinted at that. I mean, that's been sort of hinted in throughout the series, the throughout the show. This idea is that the Doctor is an adrenaline junkie. He's looking for the next exciting moment, mm-hmm. and when he has downtime, he gets manic and he gets unpleasant to be around. So there's some. I think there might be something to that.
It's kind of like Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, in many ways, I think as literary characters, apart from the fact that Moffat's involved with the shows, but just as literary characters back to the Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes, there's a lot of similarities. And I wonder how much of who we know as the Doctor today over the past 50 years developed out of some, consciously or unconsciously, developed out of the character of Holmes. I'm sure that's not an original thought. So from there, we have the Davros really developing this pathos, this really calling on the compassion of the Doctor. At one point, even saying, you know, did I do right? Am I a good man? Which is an echo, of course, to something we've heard before, the Doctor's own wrestling with that very recently.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of over the top. I thought that, I mean, they had a nice bonding experience between the Doctor and Davros going, but that kind of, that's that line, the Davros asking the Doctor apparently seriously, am I a good man, it caused me to lose suspension of disbelief.
That's where Admiral Akbar yells out, it's a trap!
Yeah, exactly.
It seemed to be a quite obvious ploy at that point, and maybe maybe that's where the Doctor kind of clued in to what was really happening.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it was almost mocking the Doctor.
Right.
You know, as if Davros knew the Doctor's own struggles with that and was using it to mock him.
Mm. Now, apparently, the Davros here, as he wants to see the sunrise with his own eyes. We're reaching the penultimate moment of this deception, and he wants to use his own eyes. Has Davros, like, have we always known Davros to not use his own eyes and only use that weird third eye that's reminiscent of the Daleks? Has he always been sort of blind, naturally blind, or like not using his own sight?
Yeah, he's always had his eyes, his natural eyes closed, and the inference has always been that he couldn't use them, which is why he had the cybernetic eye in his forehead, which frankly I like a lot better than when you have the Dalek puppets with the Dalek eye stalk sticking out of their forehead. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Davros is modeled after a Dalek. He's got a chair that's shaped like a Dalek casing. It's got the Dalek bulbs. And instead of having an eye stalk, he's got the third eye on his forehead. And I'd much rather have the Dalek puppet people have those than the eye stalk.
Right. We saw that in Boris in the previous episode and then in previous series, we saw human Dalek sort of puppet hybrid sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So, Missy has we come back to Missy and Clara. Missy has a pretty interesting comment where she says she refers to Clara as the friend. Well, actually, I don't want to jump ahead too quickly because we have a pretty key moment here, which is when the Doctor, says he's going to give some of his regeneration energy to Davros to allow him to have enough life in him to see the sunrise one final time. And then, the trap closes. Colony Sarf grabs the Doctor and starts sucking the regeneration energy out of him, which creates a couple of issues. Now, one of them is the Doctor, we know that he's been reloaded full of regeneration energy, but this has, apparently, we could assume remove some of those 12 lives that you get through regeneration from this renewed Doctor. He seems pretty free with his regeneration energy, to put it that way.
Yeah, we've seen that several times throughout, even into the old, well, not so much in the classic Doctor Who. He really didn't control it very well in the classic series, and that's how they kind of explain some of the regeneration sequences and so on. But definitely in the newer series, he's spread it around quite a bit. Yeah. Every once in a while, it seems like he's pulling out a little, his hand starts glowing as he's pulling out a little bit more. And it's just like, okay, well, I wonder how much of a well he has of that,
Right. I mean, he had to regenerate a hand once, And then at one point he kind of burps up some regeneration energy in another, I think in the Kill Hitler episode. So, I mean, it's, yeah, he seems to be a bit free with the energy, but so here he's infusing it. Now I'm trying to, here's what I didn't get. And maybe you guys can help me with this. What was, now that we know that he knew it was a trap, what was his end game? Why did he, okay, I think we know why, but if just, you know, kind of spell it out for me. Why was he willing to kind of give the energy to all the Daleks? And I know he was trying to, you know, revitalize the ones in the sewers so that they were powerful enough to come to the defense. But that's a huge gamble because you're making super Daleks of the ones that aren't in the sewers. What do you think?
I thought it was a big flaw in the writing. You're right. It's a huge gamble. And we see these things flying around. I mean, we see them flying over the city. So they're already capable of escaping. And the doctor, when the doctor confronts the Dalek that has Clara inside it, not realizing it's Clara, he says, "Your city is about to be sucked into the ground and there's nothing you can do. You've lost." Well, sure, there's something a Dalek could do. It could fly off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, the idea that the doctor would allow himself to get into a situation where he could seriously have his regeneration energy siphoned off and super Daleks created and unleashed on the universe on the chance that the sewer Daleks are going to get revitalized and kill all of them somehow, it just seemed really implausible. And it also doesn't explain why the doc, I mean, if you wanted to just kill all of the Daleks on New Skaro, there are other safer ways to do that. It also doesn't explain why he would willingly go along with Davros's trap instead of just, you know, dropping an asteroid on the city or something like that.
Right, right, exactly. I'm still left wondering when did he figure it out? Like when did he go from I'm going to visit Davros to because he's dying and I have the shame. It's a trap and I'm going to turn the tables on him. I don't get a clear sense of, I mean, I feel like with better writing, I'd have a sense of, looking back, it was at this moment that the tide mm-hmm. turned, but I just feel like we're told that he knew all along and we're just supposed to accept that. What do you think, Father Corey? How did you take it?
I guess I kind of feel the same as you do, is it's kind of the classic, well, I knew all along, well, when? You know, we keep bringing up Sherlock Holmes, but I mean, if you read a well-crafted murder mystery, if you're keying in on what's going on, you should be able to solve it by the time, if it's written right, by the time you get to the solution at the end, you should be able to go, here's who did it. Here's how they did it. Here's when they did it. You know, I don't feel like that in this episode. Yeah. You know, again, we talked about the, you know, am I a good person? And did I do the right thing? That point would be kind of, but you know, I don't know. It wasn't written well enough to definitively say that was it.
And we still don't have an answer on why is the doctor convinced he's going to die in this encounter? You know, why willingly walk into a situation like that mm-hmm. and justify the use of his confession dial?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you really get the sense that he, you know, he deployed this confession dial. He did what he did, not because he was all part of the elaborate turning the tables, but because he really did think he was going to die. Mm-hmm. You're right, Jimmy. I don't feel like I got a sense of, well, this is why he thought so. So I guess we're all, you know, we agree. We're a little left unsettled by this. And it feels like to me, that this whole thing was more about a little bit of character study than it was about, a plot, you know, mm-hmm. An interesting story overall, that it was more about, the plot was there to serve the character development more than anything else.
In fact, Peter Moffat or Stephen Moffat indicated pretty much that in an article I was reading online about this episode. He said that the genesis of the story's idea was in the fact that whenever the Doctor and Davros have been in a room together or been in a conversation together, it's been electric, even in series is that otherwise aren't well regarded, the scenes between the two of them have always been really good, just the way the two characters resonate. And so his idea for this story was, what if we put them in a room together and left them there for a very long time?
Interesting. And so we have to develop an excuse to do that.
Right.
Well, the sewers are revolting, as I think it was the Missy of the Doctor says, which is a nice callback.
That was an awesome line. Your sewers are revolting.
I felt like it was a callback to Mel Brooks with the history of the world, perhaps. But maybe. So we have this moment where the Doctor encounters Clara inside a Dalek shell, and Missy's trying to convince him that this is the Dalek that killed Clara. This is the Dalek. Shoot it, kill it. And Clara inside keeps saying, I am Dalek. But it's only when she asks for mercy and compassion and the Dalek says it that he recognizes Clara inside. And this is a key moment for this particular story, too. Can you tell me why, Father Corey? Tell the listeners.
Well, because, of course, the Daleks were bred and genetically infused to get rid of any sense of what we would consider decency, like mercy. They are meant to be total killing machines, and there is no such thing as mercy. If you are to be exterminated, you are to be exterminated. There is no, well, we'll let you live. That's, it's not a question of if you get exterminated. It's when you get exterminated after your use is over. So for a Dalek to say, have mercy on me, have mercy, is just way outside their programming, if you will. So that's where the Doctor says, where did you learn that word? Where did you get that? Where did that come from? That's not a part of your package, you know?
Yeah. And earlier, the Davros had said that, the Daleks have a genetic defect of respect for their creator. I mean, he really had tried to make them perfect killing machines, and he wanted them to be bereft of all those things, but yet, not just respect, but mercy was in there too, because it came from something that Davros put in them as well, which we see when we return to the battlefield. And I want to kind of come back to some of the stuff, but I feel like this is a natural connection. When at the very end, the Doctor returns to that battlefield on Skaros long ago, and we're back at that point where the young boy, the young Davros, is calling back, come help me. And we see that moment where the last episode ended, where the Doctor is standing there holding the Dalek gun, yelling, exterminate, which we now know means, load the gun.
Although the Doctor only yells it once and then fires it about a bazillion times.
Exactly. He's the Doctor. He only needs it once.
And he can have a cup of tea with it.
Exactly. And shoots all the hand mines. And by showing mercy to the young Davros, this is the lesson I think we're supposed to take. Showing mercy to the young Davros, he injects the concept of mercy into the Daleks, which, maybe has bearing in the future, future episodes that concern the Daleks. So I felt like that was where we're supposed to go with this episode. That this idea of if you show compassion and mercy, it plants a seed that bears fruit at other times and places, perhaps in the future. But to kind of jump back a little, the Doctor, realizing Missy's deception and attempt to get him to kill Clara, tells her that she needs to run.
Yeah.
Which she does with a little prodding. And now we're back in this big room full of the, I feel like it's almost like the house of wax for like all the showroom for all the models of Daleks throughout time. And we're left without a TARDIS. But yet we have a callback to an old device, Jimmy. What was this device or this system that the TARDIS has that we apparently have seen before?
It's the Hostile Action Dispersal System, or HADS. And it was introduced back during a second Doctor story in the Patrick Troughton era called The Crotons. And back then, just like now, the TARDIS was shot and apparently obliterated and then reassembled itself, although not with such cool special effects. It apparently just rematerialized.
Very nice, very nice. I expected it to materialize around them, like in Blink, that sort of thing. So we have the TARDIS. We're back. I'm left with a couple of questions that kind of came up, and I don't know if you have some questions. One is this the end of the sonic screwdriver? Is the sonic screwdriver seems to be this, along with the TARDIS, this iconic piece of Doctor Who props. Is this gone? And should we be surprised by that?
The Doctor has gone without the sonic screwdriver for extended periods in the past. It's something that they may not use for a while. I'm sure we'll see it again eventually, but how long that may be, I don't know. There have been decisions in the past where the creators of the show thought that the Doctor had become too dependent mm-hmm. on the sonic screwdriver, and he hadn't been using his brains to solve problems. He'd just been waving his magic wand. And that's certainly a criticism that you could make of a lot of the stories in the Matt Smith era, mm-hmm. where it was really functioning a lot like a magic wand. Right. And so you could say, we need more rules to give us more story structure. Let's have the Doctor think his way out of things. Mm-hmm. So if you just replace it with sonic sunglasses, that may not do exactly that.
Well, you know, they kind of mock that in the 50th anniversary episode, where the two Matt Smith and David Tennant doctors, you know, someone comes and they immediately point the sonic screwdriver at him. And John Hurd, the war doctor, goes, "It's a screwdriver. What are you going to do? Screw him to death? You know, sonic him to death? You know, it's just, it doesn't, you know, what are you doing?" Right. And I think they kind of mock that mindset. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to try to make the shades, Peter Capaldi version of David Tennant's 3D glasses,
or Matt Smith's bow tie, even which was, yeah. I mean, it didn't have that functional bit, but it might be that iconic piece of costume. Right. Again, trying to make him cool in that sense, like bow ties are cool. The Wayfarers, the Ray-Ban Wayfarers are cool.
Yep.
Couple other questions that I came up with. Who was the witch and who was the familiar? You know, we talked about the magician and the apprentice, and we saw it in the previous episode, and the Doctor clearly was a magician, considered the magician when he was back in the 14th century or the 13th century. But who is the witch and who is the familiar in this? And what do you think is the meaning of these episode titles, if in fact there is one? What do you think?
Who wants to go first?
Jimmy, why don't you go first?
Okay. I talked about this some in the previous episode of the podcast, and I said the obvious interpretation of – I mean, we've established the Doctor is the magician because he's called that more than once. Given that, the obvious candidate for the witch is Missy. Mm-hmm. She's the female equivalent of the Doctor. So the witch and the magician is the Doctor and Missy. The questioner then becomes, who is the apprentice and who is the familiar? And in the previous episode of the podcast, I said the surface level obvious interpretation of the magician's apprentice would be Clara, but it could be Davros if it turned out that the Doctor had a big role in Davros's becoming what he was, and there might be an allusion to the Sorcerer's Apprentice story, where the apprentice of the Sorcerer creates a big self-replicating disaster. And so if the Doctor's involvement with Davros led to the creation of the Daleks, that could be it could be that Davros is the apprentice. That didn't happen, so I default back to Clara being the apprentice of the magician, and there's evidence for that in the story when, at the beginning of the story, when UNIT calls her in, she's serving as the Doctor's kind of receptionist, screener. She's taken on some of his functions, and she's able to go toe-to-toe with Missy, for example. And so she's been learning from the Doctor. I think she's the magician's apprentice. I also think, as I predicted last week, she's the witch's familiar. Mm-hmm. The Missy compared her to an animal both in last episode, where she compared her to the puppy, and she compared her to an animal in this episode, Every Miner Needs a Canary.
Right.
And you have the two of them functioning as a comedy duo. And so I think Clara is both the magician's apprentice and the witch's familiar. And this may in some way be setting us up for her exit. I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. That would be very interesting. Anything more, Father Corey?
No, I mean, I kind of agree with Jimmy, is that that's really the obvious way they're leading it. You know, and it you know, as we've mentioned before, it's been made clear that, you know, Clara's done after the end of this series. She's going to go on to other things. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they develop that and how they develop, because I hate to say it, sometimes Moffat is kind of just slaps you in the face. He's so obvious with what he's trying to say. And I think this might be one of those cases. Could be wrong, but I think this is one of these cases where he's just, here's who I'm pointing to. I'm talking about her. Yeah, that person right there, you know.
Okay, great. So I feel like we've really covered this episode. Unless there's anything else that we've missed or that you wanted to say, if not, we could just look ahead to next week.
Actually, I have one just side note, real quick.
Sure.
Unrelated to this episode, but related to Doctor Who. I'm afraid I'm one of those many people who does constant multitasking, split screening. And at the very moment as we're recording this podcast, the headline on the Drudge Report is "Waters of Mars." NASA has just had an announcement. They found liquid water on Mars. And for anybody who knows the Matt Smith era movies, "Waters of Mars" is a phrase that has a powerful resonance.
Don't touch
David
it.
David Tennant.
David Tennant, sorry.
Yes. Don't touch the waters of Mars, or whatever you do. So with that, we'll look ahead to next week. The next episode of Doctor Who coming up this next week is titled "Under the Lake." Looks like another ghost story. Doctor Who always does good ghost stories, always with a twist. And again, like we know for that every episode of the season, it's going to be the first part of a two-parter. I don't have the capacity that Father Roderick does of playing the promos for next week, so I'll just leave that for now, and you can go find it on the BBC website or on YouTube. I'm sure you can find it all over the web. But for now, I want to thank my panel of Jimmy. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And Father Corey, thank you.
Glad to be here.
And until next time, when Father Roderick returns from Rome, this is Don Bettinelli signing off from the Secrets of Doctor Who. Thank you.